The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
Welcome to On the Mat. I am Kyle Klingman of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame, Dan Gable Museum, along with the pride of trackwrestling.com. It is Andy Hamilton of trackwrestling.com. Great to have you in our great studio here at the National Wrestling Hall of Fame, Dan Gable Museum. Glad that we have this opportunity to keep a great show going. We have one guest today, as we will on subsequent shows, and that's Doug Schwab, head wrestling coach at the University of Northern Iowa. You covered him a lot at Iowa and at the University of Northern Iowa. It's going to be fun to talk to him about his career as a Hawkeye and now as a Panther.
Yeah, Doug Schwab was the very first college wrestler I ever interviewed at the Iowa City Press Citizen.
I didn't know that until right now. What a great piece of history.
Yeah.
Why was he the first?
Because he beat Eric Juergens over to talk to me. I guess I asked for those two guys and my first year on the beat, and you know, Jim Zaleski brought him, you know, hollered at him during the middle of warmups. That was one of the great things about those early years on the Hawkeye beat is, you know, Jimmy said to me, my first day on the beat, he said, here's my home number, here's my cell number, here's my office number, call anytime you need anything. Do you need anybody right now? And they were in the middle of getting warm and getting ready to practice right before Midlands, I think. And I thought that was awesome. The fact that here's a program that's coming off five straight national titles, the number one program in the country, and I'm getting a chance to talk to a guy like Doug Schwab, that he was returning national champion at that point, one of the best guys on that team. And, they're already in the middle of practice or already getting practice started. And everybody was so accommodating. And I think that's probably one of the reasons that I fell in love with covering wrestling.
We get to cover a lot of wrestling. And usually when you're talking wrestling, you're looking at the teams at the top. Right now, there's two undefeated dual meet teams, Penn State and Missouri. As it applies to Northern Iowa, they are going to face Missouri this Saturday at the West Gym. Missouri poses an interesting challenge. They are really good across the board. This is a good dual meet team. As you look at some of the matchups and what they're going to be able to do to extend that into the national tournament, what does this do to set up Missouri specifically, not only for this dual meet, but for the MAC and then the NCAA championships in Cleveland?
Well, I think it's another tough test, right? I mean, coming up to the West Gym presents a different set of challenges than you face, you know, anywhere else in the MAC, with, you know, the heat, how close the fans are on top of you, not to mention the fact you're facing a pretty good team on the other side too, and a team that traditionally wrestles really well in that home environment and uses the elements against you.
Penn State, the other undefeated dual meet team. This is a team that just hasn't lost. It doesn't matter what adversity comes their way. Beats Ohio State without Jason Nolf, and really a classic dual meet. Let's talk about that dual meet first of all. This was a dual meet in a way that you want everything to come down to heavyweight, and you want it to come down to your world champion, Olympic champion, and Kyle Snyder getting the job done. He got the job done, just wasn't able to get the major decision, but the result is a great dual meet for the sport and a great opportunity to see how good Penn State is, even without their best wrestler.
Yeah, absolutely. That was really impressive, the fact that you take a guy as dominant as Jason Nolf, who came into that came into the season with two career losses, both to Isaiah Martinez. Then he has the injury default loss. But an incredible career he's had to this point. And you take a guy like that away from, you know, any other team, and in a big duel, like, you really feel the loss. You know, that's in that situation, what was it, a 5-point swing? Did Ohio State, I think Ohio State got a tech fall there. So five there and potentially, 3, 4 or more going to Penn State's favor on the other side of things. If he's in the lineup, you know, we've seen, you know, such a propensity for scoring bonus points out of Jason Nolf. You know, I think all but maybe a couple times last year, he scored bonus points in just about every match. So, you know, you can bank on those points, and then, to not have him and to have to put in a backup, that's a tremendous test to overcome. Not to mention the fact that you're facing, a team in Ohio State that 1 through 10 is about as strong as any dual team that we've seen here in the last 15, 20 years.
Even without Jason Nolf healthy, or even if he's not in the lineup, we don't really know what his injury is. We don't know where he is in that healing process. But with or without him healthy, I still have to think Penn State's the team to beat. I mean, they have such a good team, such good depth. You have four national champions in the lineup right now. And you even look at 197, they're three deep. I mean, it's incredible what they have and what you have to do to be able to beat a team like this. And all along, I know there was some talk about Ohio State might be that team. I don't know that I've ever wavered from Penn State being that team, because they're just so good with what you just saw against Ohio State. They know how to get bonus points. They go out and you go against the number two guy with Bo Nickel, and you get major decision points against the number two guy in the nation of Miles Martin. That's a culture that just didn't happen overnight. That's a winning culture, and that's why they've won six out of the last seven.
Yeah, I think one thing that's been really fascinating for me to see throughout the year is just keeping an eye on our track wrestling Division I rankings and the team standings, and how the numbers have fluctuated between the top two teams. First of all, the top two teams, I think Ohio State stretched it out to like a 24.5 point lead at one point. And those are just, you know, projected placement and advancement points. It's not taken into consideration any bonus points. And yet you have to give Penn State some an edge in bonus points just based on what you just laid out. Not just Bo Nickel, but, you know, Rutherford Nolf, Mark Hall. We saw it in the dual meet against Iowa, just how quickly things can change and how quickly those guys can put up bonus points. So I think one of the things that's going to be really interesting to see here in March is what does Penn State get out of Jason Nolf? Because, you know, we've seen that he's been a wide open style wrestler who It's not like he's a controlled wrestler who guys don't get to his legs. Guys get to Jason Nolf's legs, or they have, but he is such an incredible scrambler. He's so innovative, and I'm really curious to see how he adapts to wrestling with a knee injury, because of the fact that, as I just mentioned, he's one of the most creative guys in college wrestling. I think he's got a pretty high wrestling IQ. I think he's going to figure out a way to adapt, and I don't think, even if he's less than 100%, I don't think he's going to be an easy out in March. I think people are going to have their hands full with him. I think we're going to see some other parts of his game that really surface, you know, his ability to work on top, what a hammer he can be on top. We haven't got a chance to see a whole lot of that just because of the other stuff, how good he is on his feet, how the pace that he wrestles with, his scrambling ability. I think, you know, you give the guy that much time to adapt to a new style, I think he's going to be okay.
Isn't it cool that we get a chance to watch world champions compete? I know the high level is senior with Kyle Snyder having that, but Spencer Lee, junior world champion, Mark Hall, junior world champion. A lot of these guys are just competing at such a high level. World medalist too, Zahid Valencia, world medalist at the junior level. Seems like we really are in unprecedented times to see these high level guys competing at college.
Yeah. The last summer, for USA Wrestling, I would think from a men's freestyle standpoint that it has never been done. The amount of world titles and team titles, and it's unprecedented success. You look back, the last time we won a men's freestyle title was what, 1995, somewhere in there?
95.
The last time we won, the United States won a junior freestyle title, I think was like 83, 84, somewhere in there. The cadets, I think four gold medalists in Athens, Greece. Yeah, what you're seeing is the manifestation of probably about a 7, 8, 10 year plan that was put into place after Beijing. You know, we'll get a chance to talk to Doug Schwab and his memories about Beijing in 2008 there. But I think, you know, after Henry Cejudo won that gold medal, and not a lot, there weren't a lot of positives that happened for the United States over, you know, 2008, 2009, 2010, aside from Cejudo's gold medal. It really made everybody associated with USA Wrestling's men's freestyle program take a step back and evaluate and come up with a plan for moving forward. I think one of the things I remember this story because I was watching the Winter Olympics the other night, and Apollo Ono was on, and I remember Doc Bennett, formerly the developmental coach, men's freestyle developmental coach at USA Wrestling, him telling me that one of the turning points in this thing for USA Wrestling was going and sitting in a sauna with Apollo Ono. And this was probably back around 2006, 2007, somewhere in there. They were trying to get Henry Cejudo into the Olympic Training Center as a resident out there, and he was still in high school. And not a lot of people wanted to go on board, and not a lot of people were on board with bringing him in until he was done with his high school program. But Doc Bennett in the sauna one day asked Apollo Ono, "How old were you when you came to the Olympic Training Center?" And he said, I think the answer was like 14 or 15, somewhere in there. So he was in younger than Cejudo was at that point. And so Doc Bennett started pressing the issue. And what happened from that, you saw a guy that came out and geared himself towards high-level freestyle success while he was still in high school, accelerated his path in Henry Cejudo, obviously skipped the college ranks and went into just gearing everything towards freestyle, but he was surrounding himself with higher level talent on a regular basis. And I think from that, we saw USA Wrestling develop the regional training center, because you weren't going to be able to bring 17, 18 year olds to the Olympic Training Center, but you could duplicate the Olympic Training Center model on campuses around the country. And that was kind of Zeke Jones's brainchild there. And so he was the driving force behind that. And I think that's basically one of the main reasons why we're seeing what we're seeing. And then the other thing is too, just, the how advanced these kids are now because of technology and the amount of video that they can watch and the technique that they can study.
We forgot to mention Yanni Jakmahalis.
Yes.
is another guy. And just talking about Cornell specifically, there's a team that no matter where they place, they always have a guy that's fun to watch. Travis Lee, Kyle Dake, Gabe Dean. Cornell does something right here in how they're able to recruit and build a culture. And I know that Rob Cole's the head guy of that. But they have good supporting cast with Damian Hahn. Cornell is a team that really needs to be talked about more because they are a great model of how a college wrestling program should be.
Yeah, those guys were a lot of fun to spend some time around down in South Beach at the South Beach Duels. And, Yanni Diakamahalis was my tour guide. They stayed in an 8-9 bedroom mansion down in Hollywood, Florida. And Yanni was my tour guide. We did kind of like an MTV crib style walkthrough and just a lot of fun being around those guys. Yanni's got a really fun personality and a charismatic guy. Yeah, you combine that with his wrestling ability, and you're talking about a future star for not just Cornell in the next 3+ years, but beyond in his career path as he transitions into a freestyle career at the senior level. But I think one of the things, one of the points that you made, Damian Hahn, that's the name that I think of when you talk about some of these guys that have developed there in recent years. You're talking about a lot of big guy success. Gabe Dean, the run that he went on for a couple years, or 3+ years there, third, first, second in his career. Ben Darmstadt, a guy that we have ranked number one right now at 197 pounds, like 6'4", 6'5", totally different body type than Gabe Dean. But they're finding ways to adapt with his style, a guy that's a monster on top. racking up all sorts of pins right now. And so you combine those two guys with some of the other young guys on that roster and guys that are coming in. Yeah, the future's pretty bright for the Big Red.
All right, let's close out this segment. I just want to get your three most exciting wrestlers this season, and then I won't choose your three. Like, I'll have to go a different route. So if you say Spencer Lee, and I'm assuming you will, I can't choose Spencer Lee. So I've got to come up with three other exciting wrestlers. So it kind of puts me on the spot because I can't pick who you are going to pick because I'm assuming we're going to have some crossover. But I'll give you first say on the three most exciting wrestlers in the country right now. They have to be competing.
All right. Spencer's. Yeah, I'm going to take Spencer just because I want one more from you than I want from me.
Okay. All right.
Mark Hall.
Okay.
I love watching Mark Hall, just how poised he is when people get to his legs and nothing seems to rattle him. And then, you know, so much big move potential. He's so good in so many positions. I really enjoy watching Mark Hall. Jaden Ironman's a lot of fun to watch too. Three.
That's good. I like the spread there. There's some exciting wrestlers.
You know what? There. You know, we could probably stretch this out to five apiece. You give your three,
and then we want to extend it here. Right. But I'm going to go Alex Marinelli.
Okay.
I mean, I enjoy watching him. I think he's really brought a lot of life to the Iowa program, so I think that's been really important. Bo Nickel has to be right up there. And then even though he just had a loss, Kyle Snyder's a blast to watch. You don't get to see him as often as you want, but it's fun to see him, an undersized heavyweight, go out there and compete against the big boys. It's just everything you'd want in a wrestler. So it'd be Kyle Snyder, Bo Nickel, and Alex Marinelli. So if you want to extend two more of the three I have, I'm going to give you two more, and then maybe I'll do two more.
All right.
So,
all right. Well,
if you want to extend your list, because you're right, five is right.
Yeah, let me think about this a little bit. I obviously have Bo Nickel. It's nobody's a better high wire act than Bo Nickel, right? Yeah,
that's true.
You just never look like you never feel like you're comfortable. I wouldn't think if you're standing across the line from Bo Nickel.
Yeah,
because he can get you from high, low, on top. You think you got him like, you know, Sam Brooks in on a leg last year in the dual meet. Next thing you know, he splatled.
Yeah.
He's.
Can you believe we haven't said Zane Rutherford yet, though?
Well, that was my next choice. Okay. I mean, you know, I was sitting there thinking about this. I cannot remember who he was wrestling here recently. It might have been Keyshawn Hayes. It might have been even a duel before that. I can't think of anybody like anybody that puts more pressure on you on the bottom from head to toe. You know, he's putting a bow and arrow on you. He's, you know, cranking on your arms, your shoulders, your face. Like the guy just never gives you a break on the bottom, and it looks painful. He does a lot of stuff that I don't know that anybody I can remember in the last 20 years that's dished out more pain on top than him. Can you?
No.
It's more punishing. Mean,
you're
on
right.
Top.
Yeah, he is a punishing. So are you going to go your four, Zane Rutherford?
I'll go with Zane as number four.
Okay. So is it back to me? I get to choose one. It sounds like we're going all Penn State, but Penn State deserves a lot of props right now. Vincenzo Joseph, I'm going with him as my four. Yeah. Okay. And the reason, because even in the Ohio State duel, he looked like the Matrix out there. It looked like he was seeing moves that were coming before they were coming. It just looked like he was so relaxed, and he just has grown from last year. I think he's a lot of fun to watch. So he would be definitely on my list. And I'll close it out. I'll go Taylor Lujan. We got Doug Schwab coming up. He is a blast to watch. He has a really fun style. He gets in a lot of different positions. So there's my five. So you got one more if you want to go that route to close it out to 10. I know we'll be leaving out a lot of people here.
Yeah.
But there's been some exciting wrestlers this year.
I tell you what, like 141 is so much fun. And I named Ironman already. But, you know, Yanni's a lot of fun to watch. Mm-hmm. Bryce Meredith is entertaining.
Yeah.
I think 141 is going to be one of the most fun weights to watch in Cleveland. That and 165 are going to be the two that I'm most intrigued to watch from basically Thursday night on. I think it's going to be high level, high entertainment. I think it's going to be great stuff.
Yeah. Tomasello's fun too. I mean, he puts it out there, even if he's behind. He's a gritty wrestler and puts up a lot of points, and I enjoy watching Nathan Tomasello. So we could go on and on about exciting wrestlers, but there's a short list of guys that we like to watch. One guy we like to interview is coming up next. Doug Schwab's the head wrestling coach at the University of Northern Iowa. We'll pick his brain about a variety of topics. He's next on the mat. We are back on the mat. I am Kyle Klingman of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum, along with Andy Hamilton of TrackWrestling.com, our first guest for this new format of our show. Doug Schwab, head wrestling coach at the University of Northern Iowa. This is his eighth season as the head man. He was an Olympian in 2008, also a three-time All-American for the University of Iowa. He picked up an NCAA championship of his own in 1999. How are you, Doug?
I'm doing great. Just got done with workout. Had a good day of individual work and, you know, just getting ready for the end of the season, Missouri on Saturday. So it was a good day of work, though, for our boys.
Well, not only is this end of the season for you, but it's the end of the season for a lot of high school wrestlers. The Iowa High School State Wrestling Championships are taking place this weekend. You were a one-time state champion, made the finals three times, but you weren't that blue-chip recruit. Looking back, what do you think the University of Iowa saw in you that they wanted to make sure they got you into the fold, got you into the program?
Man, I think a guy that was getting better, you know. I mean, I hadn't wrestled a ton throughout my high school career just because I had some injuries. But I think they saw a guy that was getting better. You know, I had a really good senior year. I beat two state champions in the state tournament and beat them pretty handily. I think kind of the way I did it, I think really raised some eyebrows from them, you know. And recruiting was a lot different back then than it is now. I mean, you know, they would start really the recruiting happened in the spring. There wasn't a fall signing and all that stuff. So I mean, really the majority of all the recruiting kind of came after I had a really good state tournament. You know, I'd been hurt the year before, got second, like I said, got second a couple times, hadn't really broke through on a national scene, but you know, all that stuff was to come. And I think they kind of knew the work ethic that I had, and obviously having a couple older brothers that were really good wrestlers and knew the Iowa mold at that time.
So looking back, what was your scholarship offer that you got? When you get in and you have 9.9 scholarships, they have to offer you something. What did they give you at the time?
What did I get? I got 40%.
40%?
And I remember Gable compared me to a couple other guys on the team, and one had just been maybe third, you know, and he's like, well, you think you're worth what this guy's worth? And what am I going to say?
Right.
Yeah. I didn't really, you know, and I'll tell you, I didn't care. It wasn't about that. It was about I wanted to go, for me at that time, I wanted to go to the place that I thought was the best fit for me. And money wasn't the concern. You know, I was fortunate enough to have, you know, I had brothers that went through the process already that, you know, Mark was a coach up in Minnesota. And the great thing that he didn't do is he didn't pressure me. You know, he's like, he said, I want you to go where you feel is the best place. He gave me some guidance, but he could have pushed me really hard to go to Minnesota and made it really tough on me, but he didn't do that. And I appreciate that, you know, to this day that he didn't do that. You know, he made sure I felt good about where I went, and I did. You know, at the time, that's where I felt was the best place for me at that time. You know, right now, man, I don't know. I mean, maybe, you know, if I'm coming out today, it would be a lot different. You know, you just got to find the place that's the best fit for you, and that you mesh well and that you feel like you're going to grow the most. And that's what I tell all the kids that we recruit too. They got to find that place.
Do you feel like that gives you an advantage knowing what you went through being a one-time state champ? Do you look
in
at recruiting different?
What do you mean?
Well, just because you were a one-time state champion, do you kind of see guys that might be under the radar for others?
Sorry, you cut out.
I'm sorry. Hey, just as far as just looking at recruiting for you going to Northern Iowa, are you able to kind of see those guys that might be the Doug Schwab mold that allow you to recruit some of the blue chip kids that maybe are overlooked by other programs?
I think there's blue chippers all out there. You know, some of them are blue chippers today that will be blue chippers in a year or 2 years or 3 years. You know, that's kind of part of our job is to be able to see a guy that's kind of rising that hasn't hit their stride yet. You know, you get some guys that they're, you know, you can kind of just pat them on the butt and just wrap them out of the box, and they're going to go out there and they're going to whip a whole lot of tail. We haven't got a whole lot of guys like that. You know, we like to develop guys and really want guys that love the sport. I think that we're doing a pretty good job of finding guys that haven't hit their stride yet, that are getting better. And, you know, we watch a lot of film. We do a lot of work, background work, to make sure that these are the type of kids that are going to come in and fit in the program and that buy into what we're doing. Because you know what? If they believe in what we're doing, we're going to get more out of them. And then, man, they're going to compete. They're going to compete to the best of their ability. And that's, I think that's what we want. I don't know. I don't. If being honest and open and being who we are is an edge, then yep, then that's our edge.
What characteristics do you look for in a recruit? What makes somebody a good fit for Northern Iowa?
I mean, really, really love the sport. And that's a hard thing, because a lot of kids will tell you they love the sport, but, you know, get them on campus for a while, get them into some workouts, see how they react to maybe getting their butt kicked a little bit, see how they, what kind of questions they ask. I mean, are they in tune with the sport? Do they know what's going on? Do they know even what's on, you know, around the team? Are they looking beyond even just results? Are they looking at, you know, a guy like, take a guy like Drew Foster, you know, and that's an easy guy because he made a big jump from year to year. But I mean, our place is developing guys. You know, is there a certain style that we really make a guy wrestle, or are we kind of open to trying to develop what that guy's good at? Because I can tell you what, I had six individuals today, and every one of them was different as far as skill work that we did. There's some basic things, but man, what guys do well, we're trying to build on that and not try to make them a cookie cutter. And that takes a lot of work on our part. But I just think, man, it seems like guys that are maybe a little bit the underdog, you know what I mean? I mean, the guys that, and I don't want to not blue chip, because I believe all the guys that we get are blue chip, or they'll become blue chip. But maybe it's not going to be that frontline guy every single time. Maybe it's not going to be the absolute number one guy. But it's a guy that comes here and, man, they feel like it fits. They love this place. They love being in a smaller gym, smaller environment, smaller school, but they're big time in their thinking. And the people that they're around, man, that just, I don't know, it's just something's growing here. There's a culture that we're building, that I can't talk about. You have to feel it. And it's not fake. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. I mean, we are who we are. How I talk to the guy in the first day I meet him, the same way I'm going to talk to him 5 years from now, 10 years from now. I care about our guys, and we want to build relationships with them and want to get the absolute most out of their ability. And guys that love the sport, and that, then what happens is, if things get tough, they'll stay with it. Because, man, college wrestling is hard. College wrestling is very tough. They're going to take some lumps in the room. They're going to take some lumps in competition. And how do they respond to that? And that's what I'm trying to find guys. So it doesn't have to be the guy that's a four-time state champ. You know, I mean, those guys are great. We have some of those on our team too, but we have everywhere in between, and I think they all fit into the program.
Does your scholarship situation force you to recruit Iowa kids?
No, I like Iowa kids. I mean, I love kids from everywhere, but man, I'm a small town Iowa boy. I mean, Randy Pugh's a small town Iowa boy. I mean, a lot of guys are on our team. I mean, and you know, you think about the class we got a few years ago with Max. I mean, not only kids in the state knew Max, but I mean, kids outside of the state. So I mean, sometimes you just got to get that first ball to roll. I mean, I can tell you kids that we're talking to right now. I mean, we got kids from Minnesota. We got kids from New Jersey. We got kids from Georgia. We got kids from Illinois, Wisconsin. I mean, you name it, Missouri. We're going all around the country. So it's not like we're just limited to here, but man, I know their background a lot more. And to me, that's something that's important. I mean, I know those Dodger kids. I've watched those kids since they were 5, 6, 7 years old. I mean, that's an advantage to us knowing them so well. And I don't know. That's why I like Iowa kids, man. I feel like there's already a connection there. And you're from the state of Iowa. Wrestling is important in the state. They've grown up in the state. They've grown up probably spoiled a little bit because they get to go down to the state tournament, which is an absolute spectacle. It's one of the, you know, I've been to some other state tournaments, and it's an incredible atmosphere. It's not, Wells isn't what Vets was, but man, they grow up with it being a little bit of who they are. You know, wrestling in the state of Iowa is special, and they get to represent a state school. Man, I got to do it. There's nothing better. I get to coach at that state school now that I grew up in. There's nothing better than it.
Well, let's talk about that for a little bit. I mean, we got a chance to talk this afternoon off air about Wells Fargo versus Vets Auditorium. And for the people that are listening around the country that have never, or even in the state of Iowa, that never got a chance to experience Veterans Auditorium for Iowa State High School Wrestling, can you describe what that was like as a competitor?
Energy. It was almost a street fight to get out to the mat. And then what happened is there's a big match, or you have someone from your town, and everyone could get down on the floor. So they're all in those bleachers, and you had family members that are, you know, there's guys constantly, it's almost like just ants moving around everywhere. You know, they're kind of going to where the food's at. And you'd have my brothers. I can remember my brothers being right next to the mat. And then the guy that I'm wrestling, his brother's right next to him. They're shoulder to shoulder. And I mean, just the energy was, I mean, I can't describe it. You know, Wells, you're just removed from the action. I mean, Vets, you could get right next to it. I mean, there was times where I remember you had to elbow through people to get to your mat. And I don't know, to me, that's awesome. To me, that you can get right next to the action and you can hear a coach yelling and you can see, I mean, you can like see the sweat rolling off a guy, and you know, you're coming off the mat and you got your buddies are high fiving you and that stuff. I mean, I've never seen an atmosphere quite like that. And I understand why they go to Wells and they can control it a lot more, but man, that was something special. Every time I went there, I was just like, this is one of the greatest things in the world. And then I remember going after I went to college, and it was still like, there's nothing better than being able to be 10 feet from the mat.
What makes Northern Iowa wrestling different from the other state schools? Because that's what you're going to get compared against, is Iowa and Iowa State. What makes Northern Iowa unique from Iowa and Iowa State?
Size of our school is one. It just, I don't think you get lost in the shuffle. You're not a number. And it doesn't matter if you're talking about in classrooms with your professors, if you're talking about in the athletic department. I just don't think guys are ever looked at as a number. I mean, they're a person, they're a name. And sometimes I've been in some bigger schools, and sometimes, you know, you can really get lost in the shuffle. It's really hard to get lost in the shuffle of you and I, just because of, one, the support we have, how much people care about. And you know, you can say, well, everybody cares, everyone cares about, but when you have 12,000 students compared to, or you have a 20 people in your classroom compared to 100 people in your classroom, how can you not get more attention? And I don't know, I feel like that's a benefit. A lot of kids are coming from smaller environments, and it's only in size, though. It's not in frame of mind. It's not in belief in the program. It's not in the effort that we're putting in. It's not in the support that we get. Nothing, none, no parts of that is smaller. But just the smaller environment and be able to be as hands-on as we are in all aspects of the program and all aspects of the school. I know it sets it apart. You know, just ask our guys. Ask guys that have been in some of the other places and they came here what the difference is. You know, they can explain it a lot better than I can.
So with Northern Iowa, you have a great facility in the West Gym, historic West Gym. 1950 NCAA championships were there, state tournaments. It's just an iconic place. That's where the home of Northern Iowa wrestling is. Do you want to get to a point where you grow to where you just said Iowa State, you guys beat Iowa State. Do you want to grow to a position where you guys have it in the McLeod Center, which is bigger?
Yeah, but this environment, though, the on top of a guy when you're 5 feet from a mat. I mean, when you're in that front row of the bleachers, I just don't think that you can duplicate that. You can't do it. I mean, there's something special about everyone being on top of you. There's something special about, you know, even that on that outside bench, when you walk back to your locker room, you almost got to go through people. It's almost like there's just people on top of you. It's claustrophobic the whole time. And you hear, you know, talk to other teams and they love the environment, but then they also don't like the environment. Would I like there to be 6,000 fans every time we roll out? 100%. But to be able to go and only have 3,000 there, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I mean, let's have an incredible demand where people are lined up like they were for that meet and people are fighting to get tickets, and then we'll do it. I mean, I think we need that more in the sport of wrestling, kind of like what Penn State's created, you know, where it is a tough ticket, because before everyone's just like, I can show up at a wrestling meet I can just roll in any time I want, you know, where some of these other big time events, these big time football games, you're not just going to be able to roll in any time and get a ticket. You're going to have to plan ahead. And I think that's I think that's something that we need to be able to do in wrestling. And the better our team gets, then, you know, you go from 2,000 to 4,000 to 6,000 people every meet. I mean, would I want to have McLeod packed every single time? 100%. And that's ideally where we go to. But there's an extreme advantage to be able to be in the West Gym. I mean, you've been in here plenty and felt it. I mean, you tell me other environments that you felt like this, you know, and just, and I know there's bigger crowds. I'm not going to say there's not bigger crowds because we can only get 2,100, 22 people in here. But as far as just that energy and that stifling feel, and I absolutely love it, man. That other night, that got me fired up because now if we don't have that kind of crowd, it's like, I mean, it's almost, I don't want to say a letdown, but it's like, man, you see what it can be every time, and that's what we want to make it. So once we get it like that, Kyle, every single meet, then we'll talk about moving over to McLeod for some meets.
It's been a challenging season from the vantage point that you only had four home dual meets. What have been the challenges now that it's over that you've seen in hindsight to only have four home dual meets?
I just think from our fans to kind of get some traction, you know, because, you know, almost 2 months in between, and I don't want to say people forget, but a lot of people maybe aren't tuning into Flow Wrestling to watch a meet, you know, and you get a lot of people, they still come to meets, they pay attention to the results, but actually being able to watch the guys, I just think you get detached from it a little bit, and, you know, you can create excitement. And I can tell you next year, it won't be that, you know, we got five right now. We're working on getting at least six duels at home. You know, I'd like to get another one. It's being pretty tough sledding just to get teams to want to come in here. And for one reason or another, I don't know. And I understand Big Ten, they have a tough schedule. They already have nine duels, and I get that they fill up their schedule. But, you know, we got some teams that are within 4 or 5 hours. You know, we got a handful of them. And when you can't get a single one to wrestle, you know, that does make it tough for us because people want to see those teams, you know, and when a team say like Nebraska does come in, that does make a difference. And, you know, we'd love to get those teams on the schedule any year. You know, I know everyone's, the team's real good right now. So yeah, you want to wrestle those teams. We'll wrestle them whenever. It doesn't matter. Like we plan on staying up there, being one of the best teams every year, year in, year out. So when we want to wrestle those teams.
Do you anticipate your February schedule will look similar to this going forward in terms of layout?
I would say yes, and probably very similar teams too. You know, what I can tell you what's happening kind of in scheduling right now is a lot of teams are staying, you know, we wrestled here last year, but we're going to wrestle here again this year. I think just to make it so there's not a whole lot of jockeying around. We'll probably have three duels, you know, the last 3 weeks. I'd say we'll probably stay real similar. We'll probably keep Missouri. I can tell you next year, Missouri is going to be the week before or the week or this week, you know, the second or third, the second to last or the last week of the season. Iowa State's going to probably be similar time. Okie State, you know, we're planning on going on the same time. So yeah, it's going to be a very similar schedule, as far as how we finished. I think, you know, we kind of got to take inventory as after the year a little bit, as far as what we're going to do from a tournament perspective, but, I don't know. I like how our schedule shaked out. We've had some breaks in there, which I think have been good to get some training in. I don't know. Ultimately, you know, we'll see how we finish. That'll tell us a lot more.
Doug, what other college wrestling programs do you admire?
What programs do I admire?
Yeah, that you like and would like to replicate. You say, wow, I look at that. It's a quality program, and I take something from it.
So programs, I mean, there's a whole bunch of them. I mean, I can tell you that the program that we're wrestling this weekend, Missouri, to think about where they were 16, 17, 18 years ago. You know what I mean? I mean, there was five teams in the Big 12, and basically it was everyone but the Missouri guys were going to nationals, you know, for a while. And then he's built a great program. They're very consistent. You know, you have a guy like Askren, I think that really kind of really put Missouri on the forefront of everyone's mind. But I tell you what, they do a great job of having their guys prepared. Every guy, it doesn't matter if it's a first string guy, second string guy, third string guy, and they can compete and compete at a very high level. And they've done a really good job of staying consistent year in and year out. You know, I'm thinking about that team because we wrestle them this week and we're in the same conference as them, and they do a really, really good job and probably get overlooked a lot, you know, because there's some other teams that maybe are in front of.
You still there, Doug?
Yeah, right. I'm still here.
Okay, yep. We just lost you there for a little bit, but appreciated your commentary on Missouri. Now, one of the things you did that was unique, and you might come back to this, is you wanted anyone that had an Iowa shirt, Iowa State shirt, to turn that back in. It's all Northern Iowa for you. So because of that, does that mean if you're watching a match, say, from, I don't know, 1999 or 2000, let's just say Tony Davis is wrestling Mike Zadek, one of your teammates, are you going to now be pulling for Tony Davis over Mike Zadek, or someone that wrestles you like Mark Ryle wrestling Doug Schwab? Are you going to cheer for the UNI guy?
No. Whenever, whatever program I've been at that time, I'm 100% committed to that program. And it's not, I'm not at that program anymore. I'm not at Minnesota anymore. I'm not at Virginia Tech anymore. When I was at those programs, I was 100% committed to those programs. And I bladed those colors. Same thing that I do right now. And that's how it should be. I mean, man, these guys, they pour their heart and souls out for me in this program. These guys give up so much and sacrifice so much to be able to represent our program the right way. My coaching staff puts way too much in for me to think any other way. But at that time, and you put me back in 1999, 100%. Don't even think about it, man. I'm going to war. I'm going to war for Mike Zadek. Not going to war against him, but like we did last week. But no, I mean, I know what you're trying to get me to say I still like Iowa, and I don't. I'm 100% you and I, purple and gold.
So, what I'm trying to get you to say, if you're 100% purple and gold, you'd be cheering for Nick Flack over Doug Schwab when he wrestled you.
Why would I? That's 2000. Those are totally different times.
I know, but that's what I'm trying to do, Doug. You didn't take my bait, is what I'm saying. I'm trying to get you to go across the board for Northern Iowa. So you didn't buy into what I was trying to do. So now,
well, I see, because I'm putting myself back in 1999 in a lot different colors are different then.
Well, I want to go back to that because you mentioned Mike Zadek. I watched some battles with you guys in the room, and they were unbelievably heated. How much did that help you to have that guy that was at 149 pounds at the time? You were 141. That had to be a huge edge for you to get better and to grow. Because I think in your sophomore year, he actually beat you in the wrestle-off, didn't he?
Yeah. So that whole sophomore and his freshman year, you know, we were both 41 pounders. We were both battling. He came out to the Big Ten tournament and was warming up on the bike, trying to get his weight down, like still thinking he was going to have a chance to be the guy. You know, I think the good thing was is after Midlands, man, I closed the door. You know, I kept winning every match. You know, when you do that, then you don't give a guy a chance. But it made me better. I mean, without a doubt, man, there was no time where I could just, okay, I'm okay. But I think that's one thing. You have to have guys that are pushing you in the room. You have to have guys that sharpen those blades and make you better and push you to that edge. And we were able to do that. You know, I had some great other teammates. A guy like Juergens, a guy like Strittmatter. Strittmatter helped me a ton. I mean, he was awesome in the room. I worked with him a whole bunch. You know, a guy like Josh Budke, who doesn't get talked about anymore, but man, those guys helped me. There's a lot of unsung heroes that build a team. There's a lot of guys that don't go out in the national tournament, score any points, that build the team, that make you better, that got you, helped you get you where you were. And I don't forget that. I'll never forget that. And I make sure our guys don't forget that. You know, we got everybody pulling that same direction. And so, you know, you talk about Mike Zadek, but I'll talk about some other guys that maybe weren't the named guys that helped me just as much and improved me and got me better and made a huge difference, man, for me and where I got to in the sport and where I continue to get to. You know, I always lean on other people, man. People make me better. But man, Mike Zadek helped me. There's no doubt.
You had some unique matches that always are imprinted in my mind when you were at Iowa, especially your freshman year. Dwight Henson, you disqualified him, came back against Eric Guerrero, won 9-8. You just had this magical way of staying in a match, even when you're a freshman, and maybe the results weren't going your way the entire season. How are you able to build that mentality where you're able to stay competitive the whole match and never give an inch?
Man, I grew up with two older brothers that kicked the hell out of me for a lot of time. You know, they're 10 and 12 years older, so if I didn't learn how to keep fighting, then something was wrong. I mean, and that's kind of, I think, what they instilled in me is that you just keep coming. You know, one thing I can control is my effort and how much I fight and how long I fight. And even when I got into that room, you know, it didn't matter if I got my tail kicked, I'm going to keep coming. I mean, I can control that. I can control if I put my head down. I might not be able to control getting my butt kicked because maybe a guy's just older than me and more experienced and better, but I can control if I put my head down and quit fighting. And just, I don't have something in me, man. I don't care. Just, I'm going to wrestle as long as they give me. And then if I lose, I lose. But it's not going to be from, I guess, just conceding anything. I don't know. Because I think that would be a struggle. You know, I know you get beat, man. Sometimes you just don't have enough time. And that's why I like being able to wrestle for about an hour. Then I usually feel like I'll get the best of a guy. But in a match, you got 7 minutes. So you got to be able to make the most of it then. But, you know, I'll talk about, you know, we got some guys on our team right now that they're battling and they're maybe the results aren't their way. They just got to keep knocking. And they actually talked to our team about that yesterday, man, that you got to keep knocking. You have to keep knocking. You got to keep believing. And when it's toughest, man, sometimes when it's the darkest, that's when that dawn comes and you just got to keep knocking and some great things will happen. And if it doesn't happen in wrestling, it's going to happen in something else because, you know, you attack with that kind of mentality and you believe that way and you can handle anything that comes your way. And I think that's what it is, man. I got faith and belief in myself and the people around me. And I had a lot of people around me telling me, you know, you're pretty tough. You're pretty good. So I believed it.
Well, just talking about that, I don't know that I have data to back it up just based on feel. It just doesn't feel like there are those epic comebacks as much within the last 5 years that we saw back in your era. Hey, I even think of Mike Zadik coming back against Jared Freer and just some of the matches I mentioned with you, the Brands Brothers, Ironside. They kind of had that ability to come back and make that really win regardless of what the score was. Why do you think that might not be as much the case right now with some of these guys?
I think weight control helps. I think guys are doing a better job at taking care of things. I don't think you feel as many guys just drop it off the edge. You know, I think before guys would just kind of, they would just drop off that edge. Guys are doing a better job, I think, of being able to stay mentally focused. You know, I mean, I think guys are stronger. I think guys are just more prepared than they've ever been. And I think wrestling's as good as it's ever been. Guys are just... they're better wrestlers. I mean, some of these guys are coming in with 1,000 matches. I mean, so they know positions so well. I mean, they've been in big matches since they were little kids, you know? So I don't know if guys get overwhelmed quite as much as they used to. But I think guys are taking care of things in and outside of their room much better than they ever did before. And then it's not just kind of one team or two teams. It's across the board. I mean, there's not a whole lot of secrets out there.
You got an Olympic gold medal at the West Gym now. Bill Smith's 1952 yeah. Olympic gold medal. He's the only Olympic champion in any sport at Northern Iowa, an icon. Your mat is named after Bill Smith. What does that do for these guys to be able to walk by every day and see an Olympic gold medal?
What? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Maybe
okay,
you didn't
sorry,
catch that question.
Out,
yeah, that's fine.
What does it do for our program?
Yeah.
I think it just... for me, and you have to talk to our guys, it's just inspiration. And I told you, you can do it in this building. You can do it with these people around you. It's been done in here. It's been a long time, but you got to dream like that. You have to believe that you can go be a world Olympic champion. You have to believe that you can do it. You have to start dreaming that you can do it. It's not all of a sudden that something's just going to happen and then like, well, I haven't thought about doing it, but then it's going to happen. Like you have to absolute that belief, man. And that, I don't know, to me, that's what it does. I mean, I get to see that, man. We had a guy that went through this program, went through this building, and now he's going to offer to inspire. Really, he did. I mean, he's inspiring me every day. I get to see it every day. So it's real easy to, when I walk into the room, to be like, be reminded, one, that he was that selfless, that he gave back the medal, and that he believes in the program that much, and that we have people that really, man, that they want to give back that much to our program. I mean, that's, to me, that's incredible, getting to see the family, getting to see the tears in their eyes and how good they felt about, you know, how he was honored, how his medal was put, you know, I guess put in its resting place. But for our guys, it just, they want to reach the pinnacle of sport. They can do it here, and they have to start believing that they can do it here. And They don't have to wait till tomorrow to start believing they can do it. They need to start doing it today, and it'll serve as that reminder on a daily basis.
Your wife, Allison, posted on social media last week some opening ceremonies pictures from Beijing. And when the when the Summer Olympics, Winter Olympics, whatever it is, when those roll around, what kind of memories does that stir up?
You know, that's, I think I probably, unfortunately, I tried to kind of file it away for a while. You know what I mean? Because you plan on meddling, you plan on being an Olympic champion, and it doesn't happen, and then you kind of get bitter about it. And now I'm really trying to work on that, you know what, I'm trying to not focus so much where I didn't get what I wanted, but also being able to use it to help me be a better coach, help these guys prepare themselves better. So I think a lot of times I just put it away and kind of almost embarrassed in a way because you didn't win a medal. Because I'm around guys that were Olympic champions and were medalists. And it was like, man, almost like, man, I didn't even get a medal. You know, I didn't win a match there. What, something wrong with me? Instead of kind of the other way, that what incredible opportunity it was. How can I use this to help guys in the future? How can I use that disappointment to make me a better coach and not kind of be bitter about it? But more that, man, it was incredible. Man, I can tell you walking into those opening ceremonies with all the other Americans, what an incredible, immense amount of pride I had to be able to do that. And that, man, you're recognized with one of, you know, a few hundred other guys in your country that got to come and represent your country. It's something incredible. There's a few things that I won't forget. I mean, absolutely walking out there, being able to walk with the group, being able to meet the president before, being able to talk and just see all these other guys and, you know, all these other Olympic champions, and all going to be able to see Michael Phelps win an Olympic gold medal and then 30 minutes later go win another one. I mean, those kind of things will stick with me. You know, unfortunately, I think I've kind of put away some of the competition because, you know, you can kind of say, well, you know, it hurts too much, which, yeah, it hurts. But, man, sometimes you got to get over that stuff too, right? You got to be able to move on. I mean, because that's not a very healthy thing in life. So I've reflected back and been proud of that moment. And really, I'm just going to try to use it for future reference to help guys that are trying to get there and not make the moment too big. You know, I think I've built it up so much. Actually, we were talking to some guys today, and they were talking a little bit of how they get real kind of nervous before matches. And one of the other coaches asked me, how'd you feel walking out, you know, in Olympics? And I was like, I could tell you what, I felt good till I started to walk out there. And then things got a little jello-y. And, you know, for one reason or another, you know, why in that biggest moment, something you prepared your whole life for, you know, why would you get worried? You know, I know I was prepared. So what happened? And I'm going to try to use that to figure that out in the future for our guys. So really it was a great learning experience. Obviously a great memory, and man, just the reach of the Olympics is absolutely incredible. All the people that reached out and supported my family to be able to get over there, I'll never forget that, because man, there's just something special about the Olympics. I mean, it resonates just with the whole country and the whole world. And I mean, that's what I remember.
Doug, I want to close out with this. You have Missouri this Saturday at the West Gym, final dual meet, final home dual meet for you as well. This is a special dual meet up and down the lineup. There's a lot of matchups to get excited about. For me, it's 174. You have Daniel Lewis against Taylor Lujan. From your vantage point, how much fun is this going to be to close out against a great team like Missouri?
You know, we wrestled them in the last duel last year for us. You know, it was a week earlier, and you know, as a team, we probably wrestled one of the best duels we've wrestled. This up and down the lineup, man, we were just so composed. You know, we didn't rush anything. It's like, man, we're just like, it was like you have a test and you ace it. That's kind of how I felt like in that duel. And that's how we need to go out with this duel too. I think they're 17-0, a very good team. You know, you kind of mentioned that duel match at 74, but I think there's four matches where there's two guys in the top 10. There's six, I think, matches where you got two guys at least in the top 15. So that's a big time duel, you know, and big time opportunity for our guys. You know, with the way seeding points work and the way it works at the national tournament, opportunities for those guys to really bump up seeds. Some guys won't have those opportunities again, just because maybe in the Big 12 is not as deep, or you don't have someone that's ranked in front of you. But for us, just go out and beat a guy maybe on paper that you shouldn't. Because that's what we're going to have to do right now to really make a wave at the national tournament. Because we don't have anybody ranked number one. So you got on paper, we got to start beating some guys that we're not supposed to beat. And really, I just want to see if our guys, can they rise to the occasion. And, you know, in some situations, can you stick to a game plan and stay disciplined? If we can do that, then you know what? It's going to be a heck of a duel. They got a really good dual team. They have a really good team up and down the lineup, and I'm excited for that opportunity to see our team rise to that occasion, and hopefully people will get out. I know it's state tournament day, but 2 o'clock, you can still get down to the finals. I still plan on getting down to the finals. But we got some business to take care of. Hopefully the West gym's packed, cause it does make a difference. But you know, 41, two top 10 guys, 49, two top 10 guys, 74, two top 10 guys, 84, that guy's ranked, you know, he's ranked maybe top 15, you know, Drew's in the top 10, 97, both guys top 12. So, you know, that puts together some pretty good matches. And, you know, some of those guys that maybe I didn't mention that aren't ranked, another guy's ranked, and we have to keep ourselves in those matches and really battle from start to finish.
You bring up 41, and Jaden Ironman's maybe definitely one of the most dangerous guys in college wrestling. And as you prepare for a guy like that, how do you, without giving away all your secrets here, how do you prepare for somebody that has that much dangerous stuff without having your guy get paralyzed in what he's trying to do by looking out for the big stuff on the other side?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough one, because he does present so many different positions, you know, and wrestles through things so well. You know, I think then there's still some positions that Albert controls really well, and it doesn't matter who he's wrestling. He can control those positions and situations, and got to stay there as much as possible. I don't know how much I want to say. I mean, not that there's big secrets. I mean, everyone could go watch film on guys. You know what I'm saying? But he presents a unique, you know, opportunity and just feel, because there's so many positions that he's able to kind of hip over or roll through or do things that he wrestles through positions really well. I mean, man, the guy, and he's very confident. Even you watch that Heil match, Heil looks like he's going to body lock him. And the next thing you know, that guy, he hits the mat, he steps over him and he pins him, you know? So I think controlling, be very controlling in certain positions where you can limit some of those scrambles. That's what you got to be able to do.
All right, Doug, we're going to end with this final question. You are a diehard Boston Red Sox fan. Of course, Andy, diehard Yankees fan. Let's just say you and Allison are walking along the beach and there's a wise man with a beard and he says, Doug, I'm going to grant you one wish. I'm going to allow Northern Iowa to win an NCAA team championship, but the stipulation is the Yankees are going to win the World Series 10 years in a row, and they're going to beat the Red Sox every year in the ALCS. Would you take that as the final wish?
So we only get to win one title?
Yeah, you get one title in exchange for the Yankees winning 10.
No, no.
You're not even going to do that. Not even for Panther Nation?
Well, we plan on winning more than one.
Okay.
So I don't want to limit us to one. And Ben, we don't need someone to grant a wish to do that. We just got to keep working to be able to do that.
Okay. So. I think that's the right answer. That's a good answer. Hey, thanks for joining us on this call. A lot of fun talking to you and reminiscing and talking about what you have going on with Northern Iowa. We wish you all the best.
Appreciate you for having me on.
All right, that was Doug Schwab, head wrestling coach at the University of Northern Iowa. We'll be back to wrap up this show next.
We are back on the mat. Kyle Klingman of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame, Dan Gable Museum, along with Andy Hamilton of TrackWrestling.com. Just closing out this final segment here, just a great review with Doug Schwab. Andy, I thought Doug had a lot of good things to say, not only about his time with Mike Zadek and in the Iowa program, but really what it means to be a Northern Iowa Panther. You really got a vibe from Doug about what he wants to accomplish and that he's not going to shy away from getting those homegrown Iowa kids.
Absolutely. And I really enjoyed the perspective on competing at the state tournament. We got this coming up this week, and obviously the Veterans Auditorium holds such a special place in the hearts of so many people in Iowa because of the state tournament being there for decades and what a unique spectacle that was. But it was kind of cool to hear him give his perspectives on being in it as a competitor and what he misses so much about it.
We'll close out on the mat. Thanks for listening. For Doug Schwab, Andy Hamilton, I'm Kyle Klingman. You've been listening to On the Mat.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to matttalkonline.com.